Good evening, Trevor, and how are you this evening?
The sun is shining. It's too warm.
Oh, I love this weather. It's been a very, very warm week, and we've had to water the gardens. Strange weather. It was, what, no rain at all in April, was it? Rain in May, and now June is just absolutely glorious.
Indeed so. In fact, the last few days of May saw the temperatures rise, and once it's been rising, everything is growing apace, and that includes the grass, what you've planted out. It's very refreshing. And then, as you say, we'll soon be, and we will be, watering a lot.
We will be. Well, I've been weeding. I haven't put any of my annuals in yet. I think I put a few in, but I'm just waiting for this weekend. I'll put in a lot of little bits and pieces to fill up the little gaps that I've got. I went on the river the other day, and there is a boat on the river called Tinkerbell. So if any of the listeners know Tinkerbell, Tinkerbell is a big boat, and it's always got loads and loads and loads of hanging baskets. And it is moored down at the boat haven. And the guy who owns the boat is nicknamed Tinks. And I saw Tinks today, or the other day, I should say, when I was on my boat. And he said that obviously the seasons are very late, but he's putting all his plants together and they'll all be on Tinkerbell. So we'll have a lovely year this year of Tinkerbell going up and down the river with loads of hanging baskets all around her. So looking forward to that.
That's going to be immense.
It will be immense, yes. So Trevor, May, let us know what you did in May, what you advised and what you actually did for us, please.
In fact, all what I advised, I think I was successful in completing. Albeit some of it was later than planned, but we did indeed welcome the rain, and the water butts welcomed the rain. And probably May is the most busiest month of the year in the garden, because you're prepping everything, you're putting young vegetables in and sowing young vegetables, young plants. Everything needs to be done at once. After May, you can start to relax a little. That is what I was always told, and I'm not so sure if that is true, but I'm looking forward to that relaxing part of it and enjoying, funny enough, the garden.
When can you actually relax?
Well, it goes down after the end of May, beginning of June. Once you've got a lot of your bedding plants in, and as you rightly say, your annuals, and you've got your succession growing, going, and all you basically then need to do is continue a little with that and water. But then you've got to be on pest patrol, because that is when the little blighters come out, because they like your succulents as well. That's the problem. One of the most important things to do now is, as plants start to emerge, seedlings emerge, is to ensure you do plenty of hoeing. Cutting down the weed. Hoeing is the best way to do it. Just cut underneath the weed. And with this hot weather, they will just shrivel on the top of your garden. The other method, of course, is to get down on your hands and knees, or not your hands and knees, as the case may be, and hand weed. But whatever you do, some plants, onions in particular, do not like competition from weeds. So it is imperative that you get rid of them as soon as possible, ensuring, if you're using the hoe near onions, that you don't sever the onion. That defeats the object of what you're doing. The other thing I've done, or amongst other things, was I erected the main bean row with canes. I used about 40 canes to do the structure. And it all looks very good and secure. I broke it into two halves because the year before last, I had wind rock that was so severe with the foliage on it, it collapsed my bean row, which, whilst I smiled, it didn't do a lot for the crop. So I've split it into two and made it sturdier. And since then, towards the end of the month, I've actually put out the young runner bean plants, having sown them into large pots. That is my preferred way of doing runner beans, is put them into large pots, 30 centimetres diameter. You can get 10 seeds in there. They come up in the greenhouse quite quickly, between 7 and 10 days. And then once they have shown about 6 inches high, then you put them outside to harden off, and pop them in the ground. Now, the best way to pop them in the ground is to, I put two bean plants to one cane either side, and I water the row, then use a dibber, make a hole, and then when the sun's gone down, I then put the young plants in and then water them in well. So that is the first lot of runner beans, and I will have another wigwam in about 3 weeks' time. And the same with the French beans, the first lot are in the ground and the second lot are hardening off, and we shall get those into the ground this weekend. Added more string to the peonies. Because the bulbs are showing, the bulbous bulbs at the top, they're going to bloom shortly, but they grow. So on the cordon of canes, I just add another area of string so that they're all contained in one area. Otherwise, because of the nature of peonies, they will flop over. And what we don't want when they start going into bloom and they're large heads, we really don't want any wind, because wind really does take its toll on peonies. And of course, it causes a lot of mess with the leaves and the petals.
What colours have you got with peonies?
Peonies, I have got, wait for it, I've got deep red, a mild red, a very light red, pink, white, and a white blush. So I think I've got two of one cut, because I've got about six lots in all. And I took some from the front garden when I was having renovations done here and put them in the back garden, and they took pretty well, which was a surprise to me. But there we go.
When will they be in full bloom?
I would say they won't all be in the bloom at the same time. I would say in about a week and a half's time, the first flowers will appear. So I would say between 1.5 to 2 weeks, I would be expecting, providing we don't get the wind and everything, that the peonies will be out.
And how long do they bloom for?
Really, not a long time. They're spectacular when they're out, large, and they haven't really got a smell, but they are fantastic and stunning. And I would say 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks is the maximum of the real height of their performance. And then they start falling off. They go a horrid, horrid colour because they finish. You're forever going out there and cutting the stems back. So it's a short period, but they come up regularly every year. Never feed them. In fact, I don't even water them. So they're doing their own thing very well. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
I planted out my early cabbage plants in May, or there for the summer. And since then, I've planted out my Brussels and kale. And with that, I've put a construction of canes and netting, hopefully bird friendly, over them to keep the birds away. It's one of the problems at this time of year that you do have young birds are inquisitive. And if they do get under, they obviously get very under the netting. They can get very stressed in trying to get out. So you do your utmost to prevent them from getting in. I've cleared all my pot planters and tubs, and that was 11 in all. And apart from taking the foliage away, I then dug out the daffodil and tulip bulbs, and I'm allowing those to dry out. Those in the garden, in the ground, I leave in there, but those in the tubs I take out, and I then remove the top third of the compost. I save that for other areas of the garden, but then I add that remaining third with fresh compost, apply fertilizer and a blood, fish and bone mixture to just give it some oomph in the top part of the compost. And I actually planted them out this weekend. It was what I had to do was to set out in the pots what design I wanted in these tubs, so that you do not get two colours of different flowers together. It's a bit hit and miss. It's a bit of a challenge. It's a bit of a jigsaw, but that did take me quite a bit of time. And I have quite a few left over, to which they will go to good homes, I'm sure. Overwintered dahlias went in. I had five. Indeed, I correct myself. I had eight and I lost two. In other words, they didn't come. No buds appeared. I had to protect them from slugs, but they're now growing apace. I've added to them in the borders and hopefully everything is looking well. I poed the shallot and onion rows, as I said earlier, about hoeing and keeping the weeds down. So we did that. And also we planted out some courgettes. Two courgettes have gone into two separate large tubs, and two cucumbers have gone in a trough, which is, I will see what happens. They will do what they will do. I've got an earmarked courgettes to go into a part of the garden. And I also planted out a couple of marrows. So everything's looking quite full, although the first lot of radishes are nearly finished and the lettuce is growing very, very quickly. That is the normal lettuce as opposed to mustard salad leaves. And when they have finished, I will dig them up, put them to one side in the compost, and then consider what to put in those spaces that I've left. What I will do, or what I will not do, is put the same vegetables in the same area. It may mean where I had the radish, I will now put the lettuce and vice versa.
And you rotate that every year, don't you?
Well, you rotate as much as what you can, because some people do not have a large garden. Mine is medium sized, but you rotate as much as possible. It's really to ensure that any nasty diseases that may be under the soil do not carry, and they're created by a vegetable, is not exasperated more by putting the same vegetable in there each year.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, you do sometimes get a problem with what they call white rotting of the onions. And apparently, I'm fortunate, I haven't had it, but if your soil is contaminated by this fungus, because all these things are funguses and spores, is that it could be that you will not grow onions in that area for 10 years. And if you haven't got a large patch, then that can be a bit hurtful. Other than that, you just don't grow onions anymore for a while. I will hopefully do a three rotation as I have done for years. I normally leave my runner beans where they are because I enrich it each spring with fresh manure. So it's rejuvenating, whereas a lot of the things you do, you put compost on there, but you don't give it such an reservoir oomph as you do with French beans and runner beans. So they can stay where they are, providing you remove all the debris. But potatoes I move around, and brassicas I move around, and consequently with that, so I do my salad crops and beetroot and whatever.
Okay.
And I repotted delphiniums and gazania into single pots, because although you're doing your vegetables, you've got to think about the flowering plants as well. So that is what I've been doing. And also, as I mentioned last month, the beginning of the month, unfortunately, we did have some frost. Jack Frost hadn't gone away. So for about the first week, you was on constant alert and putting fleece over some of your crops. Didn't need to do it in the greenhouse, but certainly over the potatoes. But fortunately, they didn't get, as we call it, they didn't get nipped. And hopefully that is the frost for this growing season. Hopefully that would be it.
I hope so, because they got my hydrangeas this year, the first year ever that my hydrangeas have been nipped by frost. That was very disappointing. And also, my delphiniums have been awful. I mean, every year they've been magnificent, and this year they've hardly come up at all. So I suspect it was to do with the frost, as you say.
Yeah, some of the frost was quite deep, but in reality, it was the consistency of the frost. Unfortunately, that has slowed matters down, but it is catching up. Shame about your delphiniums. I've got quite a few delphiniums that a friend gave me from her daughter, and they're looking okay. I've just repotted them, and I will see how far they go and when they will go out in the garden. I hasten to add, they won't be going out in my garden. They'll be going out in other people's gardens.
Well, perhaps you can put my name on a couple, please, Trevor.
I'll certainly do that. No problem at all.
Thank you.
I've repotted some green peppers because there's certain items, peppers and tomatoes, you just keep repotting. And I finally culled my tomato plants to the ones I will give attention to. So I've just got the 9 tomato plants, 4 different varieties, and they are in their final resting place now with canes and string support. They might get moved around in the greenhouse. I don't think I should be putting any outside this year, but now is the time to wait for the trusses, which is the fruit-bearing stems and branches, to appear. And once that starts, you will see the little fruits. Once that starts, then you will start feeding your tomatoes with once a week high potash mix. Tomerite is a well-known variety, but there's a lot more on the shelves in the garden centres. And it is vital that you actually put that stuff on once a week to revitalise the roots. But ensure that when the branches are coming out, the trusses, that you take the side shoots between the main stem and the branches away. Otherwise, you don't want to channel all the energy into the side shoots. You want them to go into producing the fruit that they're designed to do. So just nip those out. And then hopefully you will avoid the problems that come with tomatoes, which you can get tomato blight, which is normally like a mildewy stuff. It's horrible. And also what they call bottom rot. Now, bottom rot is it's more unsightly than damaging, that appears on the bottom of a tomato. And that really is the result of irregular watering. So that's what you need to do. Water regularly, and with tomato blight, ensure the tomatoes are a fair distance from each other. I would say 2 foot from each other, because it allows the air to flow around and therefore they don't get that dampening fungus that will create the tomato blight. Mowing lawns and edging my lawns once a week is a constant, because the grass, since the rain, it really needs cutting twice a week at the moment until the sun really burns on it, and then you can go back to once a week. But the amount of grass that has been produced is amazing. And although I do put grass into the compost, you don't want to overload your compost with grass. Put some elsewhere, i.e. in your council collectible green bin, or you put them into bags, wait, and then ensure that you're putting layers onto your compost. If you put too much grass on in one load and then a few vegetables and then another load of grass, what it will cause is it will smell, to be honest, because grass does heat up, and it doesn't rot down the way you want it to rot down, but in thin layers, it would do the compost heap a whole lot of good. So that's what we're doing there.
Okay, well, look, let's just have a break for a moment, Trevor, and then we will come back after the break. Welcome back to the Monthly Gardening Diary with our gardener, Trevor Mallion. Now, you were talking about May, what you were doing in May, and there were a couple of more bits you wanted to add, Trevor.
Indeed, indeed. I don't know if I mentioned, I probably didn't, but the tomato varieties that I've got this year are Moneymaker, Gardener's Delight, Cerise, and Shirley F1. Now, apart from Cerise, all the other three are normal sized tomatoes, if you like. I don't go in for beef-eating tomatoes or whatever they are called, but the Cerise are the cherry tomatoes. And I had a very good crop last year, so hopefully we will be at the same this year. Gardener's Delight is an old favourite that goes back many, many years. And of course, with all these varieties, there are new ones that appear on the market every year. And I always was brought up that a tomato was red. But obviously in this day and age, you can get the colours of the rainbow tomatoes. So whatever takes your fancy, really.
Okay, that's lovely.
And as temperatures rise, the one key thing, if you have shaded or done whatever to the greenhouse to keep it cooler, one thing you should do, especially as recently we've had this warm weather, is open the door as well. You've probably got the vents open at night anyway at the moment, but to open the door and shove in, if you've got a concrete floor, water. Put water down through the middle, the pathway, so that there's a humidity is formed, and that will keep away certain pests, but it will also ensure that you've got the right temperature in there. It won't last for that long because obviously things heat up during the day. I removed the pansies from the 2-3 hanging baskets I had. They were looking a bit worse for wear. Cleaned all that out, and therefore, I mean, hanging baskets are a pride and joy of everyone. If you can do your own, all well and good, because they can be quite expensive in the shops. I do my own with ivy and pansies and petunias, and it is what it is. It just gives a little bit of colour in the garden. The carrots I sowed, I thought this was important. The carrots I sowed in the garden, and it wasn't a big row, but only half a row has appeared. Now, I was watching on the television the other morning, another gardening program, and this chap said what he thought it was and then dug this thing out. Now, what it was a moth grub. And apparently it likes carrot seeds. And he showed where you had half a whole row and half nothing grew and the other half was fine. And underneath was this little white grub. He said, there's not a lot you can do about it, but have a dig round, see if that's the problem. I don't think it will affect other crops. You'll just have to dig it over, or I will have to dig it over thoroughly and put something else in there to see if it is another problem other than that. Rhubarb, oh, I do like rhubarb, and continue to harvest, and it's had the right conditions. It's really at its freshness in May and June. It lacks a little as you go through July, certainly towards the end of July, but it's so free, doesn't need any looking after. It's wonderful. The azaleas and rhododendrons, I put a market feed in there at the beginning of the month and raked that in and put the rainwater on them because they do prefer, or you can water them, but they do prefer the acidity in the rainwater because that's why they really grow well in ericaceous soil. And I think, Sue, that possibly is that for May.
Okay, when you were talking about little white bugs, I have weevils that I dread. And I've tried everything to get rid of the little blighters. And they attack my cyclamen, they attack my polyanthus. And I think I'm washing away. The polyanthus looks lovely, and all of a sudden it looks pathetic. And I go to pick it up, and it's got no roots. They've all been eaten by these little blighters. So, and that's always in pots. It doesn't seem to affect them in the main garden, but it seems to affect them in pots.
Right. You haven't been able to get rid of them.
No, I've tried all sorts of things. So I just have to plant things that they don't like.
That's a good idea. Yes. Don't give them a full menu.
Exactly.
That's what I say.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about June. What are you going to be doing for June?
What am I going to do for June? Hopefully having a little bit of a respite.
Well, that would be nice.
It would be. But I've earmarked a few things, and obviously succession grown, as I keep mentioning, that will continue well into June when French beans will be going on. I'm putting another wigwam up shortly. I've still got my purple sprouting to, that's hardening off at the moment, put that out. That will be the end of the brassicas. I won't do any success because it takes such a long time to grow. The cabbages will be there in the summer, but the kale, sprouts and broccoli won't be there until autumn, turn winter. Yes, so there's a lot of times pinching out becomes necessary to bush out certain plants, certain crops, even certain flowers. With tomatoes, take out the side shoots. With chilies and peppers, if you take out the growing shoot, then you will have a bushier plant, and that will produce as many, if not more, chilies and peppers. So it's important to take the growing stem, pinch that out for tomatoes. When it gets tomatoes, you wait until you've got four or five, or three or four, some people prefer, trusses, and then you don't want it to go any higher, so you take the middle stem tip out, and that is known as pinching out. Watering, that will be a big issue in June, and that is all dependent, of course, on the weather, what we get, what we don't get. We don't want any droughts that we've had in previous years. Water butts is the best way of holding the water, but it's surprising how quickly what you've stored suddenly disappears onto your garden. I found that out recently. I've got 7 butts, and yet I'm struggling now to have water in them, but I then try to use tap water at the minimum, but it becomes necessary. Otherwise, your plants will shrivel up and dwindle all your hard work. So watering at the right time as well. Now, you do not want to water. I think it's understood by most that you don't water at the height of the day. The only time you'd water at the height of the day is if you're watering where plants aren't in the sun and are in shade or partial shade. So I tend to do my watering either in the morning or more or less after sunset in the evening, so it retains the water that you've put on. And it is, as I said, I can't emphasize enough, it's important to water everything. And also, when watering, aim at the roots and not the foliage. Because if you're watering in the morning and you do the foliage, the sun breaks out, especially in the heat of the summer, it can burn and scorch the leaves. So just be careful, but keep them growing. I'm going to plant out the remaining courgette and cucumber, sow more French beans, repot any remaining chilies and peppers, look after the tomatoes, do the watering, and in mid-June, hopefully, because we haven't had the biggest of harvests so far, because it takes a bit of time. Certain things are quicker than others. I have to say, I have had a few radishes for a salad, and pick and come again lettuce leaves, which is very nutritious for you. But with other things, they will take a little longer. But in mid-June, I hope to start harvesting my new potatoes, which normally, as a rule, from planting to harvesting is about 10 weeks. It's a little longer for the second earlies and a little longer for the main crop potatoes. So 10 weeks, because you really want them to be about the size of a hen's egg, because that's why they're called new potatoes. So hopefully we shall have some in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, I had my first Jersey Royals the other day and they were absolutely delicious.
Well, they've got the right soil over there in Jersey, and there is that subtle taste to them, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely gorgeous, with chives and butter. Absolutely lovely.
Oh, you're making me feel hungry. Thank you. If you have a hedge, and yeah, I have a long hedge, I'm going to consider cutting, but I have to ensure that there isn't any birds nesting in the hedge. I gave it a good cull last year. It's about 5-6 foot tall, and my neighbour and I we culled it to the best of our abilities, but it does grow. So I've started at one end and poked my head through the hedge to see if there's any birds there, and there isn't. I've had a couple of birds in the garden, but they've been mainly in the log shed. So you have to be careful when you do your hedge. I mean, I have heard there's a lot of hedge trimmers going on, but I don't think people are that aware, because birds do have second broods. So that will cause a lot of stuff to go into my green bin, but you have to do it. You have to do it. If you've got flower stems on onions when they start maturing, you need to cut them off. Because you don't, again, you want, they are flower leaves that appear on the top of the leaves of the plant, and they have seeds inside, but you don't want that now. You want all the energy channeled into the bulb underneath. So if that appears, just cut it off, cut that stem off. We need to focus, or I should focus on keeping flowers and edibles moist in hot weather. That is really imperative. I think we've touched on this earlier, so just keep at it. I will now go to the garlic, because I have 2 tubs of garlic, and once the leaves start yellowing, then the bulbs below the ground are saying, I'm ready to be harvested. So that won't be too long, because I sowed them from a garlic bulb, not the whole bulb, you just take the segments out, and I did that in the autumn, and the leaves are turning on the turn, so we shall be taking those out, I would think, before the end of this month, and dry them thoroughly and then bunch them up and hang them in one of the sheds. It's just like onions, really. You just hang them in there, they will continue to dry, and then you just have them over the winter. The other thing that's important when you're doing succession growing and other crops as well, ensure there is enough room for a crop to grow. It's all right when something is small and you put it in, and people do not give enough room either side for the crop to materialize. Therefore, you sometimes have to thin out more than you need to. Some crops don't need thinning out, like beetroot. Well, yes, they do vaguely, but they are nice big seeds, so you can see when you're sowing them. But even so, flowers, when you're putting flowers together, make sure they've got enough room in your borders, because they will grow and they do not want to be suffocated. One thing I do with, and I've got them all prepped, is when I put courgettes and cucumbers into tubs, I feed them with water, obviously, or water them. But what I do, I cut the bottoms off semi-skim milk cartons and put those into the ground near to the root of the plant. Therefore, I can direct the water through the milk carton to the roots at the bottom, so you're not going to get any wastage, and it worked very well last year, and it doesn't cost you anything either.
Good idea
indeed. You will still need, and I will still need, once they start blooming, deadhead your summer flowers. So never forget that deadheading is all year round. And I will do one last thing in June when I put my feet up and suddenly I will be enjoying the garden. That is what I want to do. But it always becomes the point that you sit in the garden or you sit outside the back on the decking and you look, and within 5 minutes you see something that needs to be done. You've got to get out of that system. You need to actually enjoy what you've done, all your efforts.
Absolutely. Hopefully, if the weather is good, of course.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that is basically what I'm going to be doing for June.
Okie dokie.
For me to do. Obviously, what will happen is, what I think is going to happen is other things will crop up as they do. But there we go.
Excuse the pun. Okie dokie. So we'll go into a commercial break, and then when we come back, we will answer some listeners' questions. Thank you, Trevor. Welcome back to the Monthly Gardening Diary with Trevor Mallin for the last part of the show, where we will have some listeners' questions. So have you got some there, please, Trevor?
I have indeed. I've had a few. When do I know when a plant is pot-bound? As a rule, a pot-bound plant is when you see the roots coming out of the bottom of the pot. Now, that is the first sign that obviously it's reached the bottom of the pot. What you don't want is to leave it too long. Otherwise, it winds itself around inside the pot. If that does happen, it all is not lost. When you gently tap out the plant from the pot, and you do that just gently tapping on the side, when you're putting it into another pot, a bigger pot, just tease the roots out at the bottom gently so that they've suddenly have been let free. I mean, in some instances, a pot-bound plant can be, I'm not coming out today, but then you might have to smash the pot. But not as a rule, you just need to tease those roots out, put them into a bigger space, and then they will start taking on the new environment. But when it becomes at the bottom and you see the roots, and they get also, if they get a bit knotted around the air pockets at the bottom, you know it's time to move them on.
Okay, dokie.
When is the best time to water outdoor plants? I think I may have touched on this. Early morning is the ideal, but in the evening is fine, providing it's not in the heat of the sun, because that is detrimental to your plants. And as I said before, just aim them at the roots, because you don't want the burn, and always water the roots thoroughly. You don't want to be watering a little bit of water here and a little bit of water there. Say for some of the vegetables like runner beans, really just need one good soak a week, because they need to take that down. That water needs to go down, and so that their roots at the bottom tap into it. If you're just, if you will, drip feeding them, it doesn't do, it might look good on the top, but it's not looking good underneath. So water thoroughly once a week outside. If during the very hot weather, you may well find yourself watering plants in the greenhouse twice a day, and even tubs twice a day, because they tubs outside will lose their retention of water. Therefore, you can obviously put gel bags in there or gel whatever's on the market at the time that retains the water for longer than just pouring water on.
Yes, I water my my pots in the morning, and then I water the garden at night. But unfortunately, it's the wind that dries out the pots so quickly.
Yes, indeed it does. Yeah, and not a lot you can do about that. Right, pests to look out for during June. Well, we got some of our favourite ones. Slugs are still about, but they'll only be about really when it is in damp conditions. They will be getting their marching orders. And if you've got whatever you're using to dispel them, then you probably still need to do so, especially when there's rain about. I have a little, I think I mentioned this before, I have a little beer carton that I put the little critters in. So they go away quite happy, but there won't be too many around when it's up getting very sunny days, warm consistently. The other ones that will be on and around are aphids. Now they're sap sucking, and they normally appear on courgettes and brassicas, your cabbages and etc. Now there are things again on the market that insecticides that are not harmful to birds and not harmful to bees either. I have this old way of doing things, really, of going around and squashing them with my hand, but that is not for everyone's taste. And obviously after the aphids come, you have the caterpillars, because the little white fly will start depositing little yellow eggs onto the leaves. But mainly what you need to do, you can see on top, but as a rule, they will lay their eggs underneath the leaf. So you have to be aware of that. As I say, squashing them is the best way. But if that's not your cup of tea, then get rid of them whichever way you think is the best. But if you do leave them to mature, they do like cabbage leaves. They do like the leaves of the brassicas, and they can really demolish a plant if left alone. The other questions I had was about a black fly on broad beans.
Oh, yes.
They're prone, not every season is the same, but they are prone to having the black fly near the growing tip. And the best way, once they've grown a bit taller, then the best way is to just take off the growing tip. And whatever you do, you need to have a daily watch on them, because they will, one minute they're there, next minute they're not there. And they can be devastating. So pinch out the growing tip and you should be okay for reducing the black fly. And I think that's it, Sue.
Ah, okie dokie. So next month, July, what will be happening then? Well, will you be able to tell us what's happening then? Or what you will be harvesting, hopefully, or what you would have harvested in June?
What I'm hoping to harvest in June was the new potatoes, the rhubarb will carry on, the lettuce, I do love lettuce, in with other stuff, the spring onions, may get the first batch towards the end of the month of carrots, and hopefully by the end of the month we'll be having French beans.
Lovely.
The courgettes, they normally grow apace, so hopefully we'll have quite a little bit. It's normally July that you're starting to see a more wider variety of crops coming out of the ground, and hopefully by then my pak choi would have come to fruition, and the chard. So, and that is something else I'm going to be sowing again, is the pak choi, more pak choi, and for the first time, chard. So we'll see how that goes.
Lovely. Okay, we'll look forward to hearing from you. Thank you very much once again, Trevor, and have a good month, and let's hope the weather stays good for you.
Thank you very much, Sue, and then there might be a chance of putting one's feet up.
Okay. Thanks, Trevor. Bye for now.
You take care, Sue. Cheers. Bye. Now. Bye-bye. Bye.
We do have some time left, and when we do, I always try and find a recipe for you with any of the ingredients that you have been growing in your garden or Trevor has been growing. And I have found pink rhubarb gin. Oh, how about that? So we want 1 kilo of pink rhubarb stalks, 4 ounces of caster sugar,
Don't use golden. It muddies the colour. It sure does. I made a rhubarb tart the other day. I didn't have any white sugar. I only had brown. And it really did look awful. Tasted fine, but it just didn't look very well. And then 800 millilitres of gin. Wash the rhubarb, trim the stalks and discard the base and any leaves. Cut the stalks into 3 centimetre lengths. Put in a large jar with the sugar. Shake everything around. Put the lid on and leave overnight. The sugar will draw the juice out of the rhubarb. After 24 hours, you add the gin. Seal and shake everything around. Leave for about 4 weeks before drinking. You can strain the liquor off through a muslin-lined sieve and transfer to a bottle. But I often just leave the rhubarb and booze in the jar and ladle it into the drinks that way. Over time, the rhubarb and the gin go a much paler colour. This doesn't look as dramatic. The upside down is that you have to get through it fairly quickly. Ha ha, that is upside down, isn't it? Do enjoy.